Hello, thank you for joining At the Root of It on the Heritage Radio Network. Today's Tuesday, October 20th, 4 p.m. here today and every Tuesday at Roberta's restaurant in Brooklyn. We're going to start today's show in latest news that Filippo Casella, founder of Casella Wines, the home of Yellowtail, has died at the age of 88 after a long illness. And Michael Broadbent's libel action suit against Random House, publishers of Benjamin Wallace's Billionaire's Vinegar, has been settled out of court. Wallace's book, which examines the authenticity of the famous Thomas Jefferson wines, portrays Broadbent poorly, and Random House has issued a public apology and paid undisclosed damages to Broadbent. In the crop report, vintners have set caution against over-extraction during the 09 harvest. It is supposedly a great vintage, and with the weather so good and grapes very ripe, people may be pumping over, doing pigeage too much, and forcing out too many hard tannins. Hopefully the forewarning has effectively reached enough of the vintners making the decisions in the cellar. And in the market feed, LVMH has announced sales of 11.9 billion euros for the first 9 months of 2009. Sales fell by 3% in the third quarter. Hennessy Cognac has performed well in the emerging markets and as well in the U.S. In the market feed, Napa high-end wines continue to suffer most in the recession. Total wine sales are actually up a few percentage points, but almost all that increase comes from wines costing $8 to $12 U.S. Napa cult wines are holding steady, but the Super Seconds, that tier of wines under cult status but still expensive, have seen sales slow. Grape prices have tumbled as well. Chardonnay that was $2,500 a ton 2 years ago is now $200 in some places. According to Santa Rosa Press Democrat, estimates are that 30% of this year's grape crop won't be sold. Let's see if we can't help that by supporting our local wines a bit more. And just before the break, I'd like to mention an exciting event that we have on the roster at Roberta's this Thursday, October 22nd. Six of the Italian La Marche region's best producers will host an evening that will feature Marche wines paired alongside autumnal-inspired canapés coming out of the Roberta's kitchen, such as Morelli's Sangiovese paired with veal sweetbreads, black grapes, guanciale, and parsley. The price is $52 per person, including gratuity, and begins at 7 p.m. this Thursday, October 2nd. For reservations, email Sherry, C-H-E-R-I-E, at robertaspizza.com. We are going to take a quick break and be back with my guest this afternoon. Welcome back to At the Root of It. Thank you to our sponsor, Sam Edwards in Surrey, Virginia, specializing in smoked ham. And to our listeners, for those who'd like to call in and ask any questions, the number is 718-497-2128. I'd like to say a special welcome to my guest this afternoon, Nicholas Palazzi, who joins us again. You were one of our first guests and at the root of it, so welcome back.
Thanks a lot.
And since you were here last spring, you've been back and forth between the U.S. and the Cognac region. Doing what exactly?
Well, I mean, as I mentioned last time, my main business is to source single casks of rare old cognacs. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty easy to understand that you're not finding those casks at every street corners,
sure.
Which is the reason why I'm going back and forth a lot, trying to meet people, build relationships with small growers, and hopefully taste some pretty amazing things, and then make them available to the U.S. Connoisseur.
Okay, great. And you are also working on your own label as well. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. Yes, I mean. I've been bottling hand tailored cognacs for collectors for the past year and a half, and I kind of realized that I should probably keep a few of those special casks and bottle them under my own label, and make them available to through selected venues to cognac drinkers. Mm-hmm. So I've decided to start doing that, and I've bottled a cask in August 2009, so a few like two months ago. First cask under my label called Paul Marie et Fils, Paul Marie being the first name of my late father.
Okay. And you brought a bottle for us to see today too, which is looking quite nice.
Well, it's
smelling even better.
I appreciate your kind comments. We hopefully by the end of the show we'll try some and we'll see if it tastes as good as it looks.
Okay.
So that's been an exciting project. I've been working on that for quite a while now, and I've bottled this. This cask, cognac distilled by my mentor in the early 1950s, bottled full-proof cask strength, so it's 51% alcohol, 102 proof, and Grand Champagne cognac, so the Grand Champagne being the first gross of the six gross in the cognac region.
And we went over those last show, but for our listeners who missed it, can you just go over what those six classes are?
Oh, sure. So they are basically organized in a circular manner. So right in the middle, you would find the Grand Champagne, which is known as being the first gross of cognac. And we saw that in the last show. Can probably just mention that the name Grand Champagne, in the name Grand Champagne, we hear champagne, which makes us think about the French sparkling wine. And it's the reason why the name are similar is because of the subsoil. It's champagne means Campania. Campania makes us think about chalk, and it's the subsoil there is indeed chalky. So
okay.
Grand Champagne, chalky subsoil, great area to grow vines and make cognac with. Now there's a south from the Grand Champagne is the Petit Champagne.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a slightly different terroir, but very great appellation, great growth as well. And then a third one, which is a bit more specific on north. That's on the northwest of the Grand Champagne. You got the Bordery, clayey subsoil, so very different cognacs made there. And then around the three, you got the Finbois, the Bonbois, and the Bois d'Ordinaire. So that's the six. That's the six growths within the cognac region.
I actually only made you repeat those just because I wanted you to say those last three.
All right.
No kidding. You just do it so well. So the one that you've bottled here, the Paul Marie et Fils, that's a Grand Champagne?
Yeah, that's a Grand Champagne. Just because I'm not trying to be a snob here. There's great things being made in the Finbois, in the Petit Champagne. I've had the opportunity to taste some pretty amazing things there. Now my mentor is an 80-year-old gentleman, ninth generation cognac maker in his family, and he's from the Grand Champagne area. So he has been helping me out, coaching me, if I may, and all the people I know, small growers, are from the Grand Champagne. So that's really where I can source pretty amazing cognac. So that's why this cognac is from there.
Okay.
But hopefully in the future, I will
expand both, into some of the other areas.
Yeah, there's definitely something that are worth.
Do you think that some of the other areas are more value driven, or?
Well, it's there's a we're talking the differences in terms of subsoil. You will find in the bois area bois ordinaire. They make cognacs made there are in a lighter style.
Okay.
And they will not age that well compared to Grand Champagne or Petit
Champagne.
Right,
that's why that's the first growth.
Right, and the reason why those cognacs in those bois area are used for blending purposes. In those cognacs that you widely find available on shelf, like VS, young VS, young VSOPs, so young cognacs by usually sold by big cognac houses. You need volume. You need to sell a lot of those bottles all around the world. So you need to you need liquid, and this liquid you're gonna find it in the bois area.
Okay.
So that's cognac that you won't be able to age them, or if you do, it's not gonna become great. So that's why those cognacs there tend to be, just because of the terroir there, tends to be made for a younger consumption.
Okay.
But there's you can find like the Borderies, Petit Champagne, Grand Champagne. There's definitely some amazing things there.
And this particular cognac that you brought in today was recently, you were given an accolade for your new label. Was this the one?
Right.
That received that?
Yeah, no, that's indeed it. I've been very fortunate. As I said, I've labeled, I've bottled, labeled, corked, waxed everything myself. This so I've bottled this cognac in August, and I had the pleasure to see a first review by the Wine & Spirits magazine in October, saying that this was quite worth spending the money on it. And then I've discovered with great pleasure that the same Wine & Spirits magazine voted this very cognac one of the 7 best spirits of 2009. So
excellent, congratulations.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
So yeah, it has been a great past months. Yeah.
If it takes off and there's more and more that want it, is there enough to go around, or how many?
So that's the thing. I do believe that you can't make something that's really great in huge quantities.
Right.
So this is I've bottled a single cask. I've been able to make 257 bottles out of this cask, plus a few, I would say, plus another 10 bottles for my family. And myself, and that's it. So once this cask, when those 257 bottles will be gone, then I will move on to another cask, which will be, in terms of flavors and aromas, different. So this is it, and I don't intend in being able to put one bottle in every.
That's okay.
Bar.
It'll make people want it more,
right?
And before the show, you were also mentioning that it's a good time for people or producers such as you, given the large house issue at the time.
I mean, as we all know, and we've all somehow heard at least, or felt it in the past months, past year. This economy is not the best ever, and some big cognac houses are indeed being very cautious, and so those cognac houses tend to purchase a huge part of the cognac available in the cognac region. And now they tend to be careful about the money they're spending. So they have huge stocks, and they tend to rely on those stocks now rather than actually buying cognacs from the growers they are in contract with. and on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
So they have kind of stopped buying their buying policy so far, trying to see in which way the economy is gonna go. And
does it provide a window for you to be able to then get in,
in a sense,
into the market? Yeah.
In a sense. I mean, get in the market, not really, because the market, I mean, is a very specific one. It's a niche market.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I can provide such rare cognacs on the market to collectors and to connoisseurs here is because I've been introduced to the small growers and mm-hmm. distillers mm-hmm. by my mentor. And you have to understand that it's in this region, in the cognac region, it's a peasant mentality. So people, if you stop there and they don't know you and you say, "Hi, I want to buy your cognac," those people have three sellers, and they're gonna welcome you with a big smile, and you're gonna go to the very first seller, and you're gonna taste stuff. Is it the best cognac they have? Absolutely not.
They show you the second and the third door because they
right.
know you, because they trust you, and
absolutely because I've been introduced by somebody they know whose family has been around
mm-hmm,
for centuries,
mm-hmm.
and so I was able to gain their trust this way. My mentor introducing me and them realizing that I was really passionate about what I was doing. Now this is not enough. And they, when you find a special cask, you feel like buying. Well, you have to. Those people usually say, "I don't want to sell." So then you have to work. You have to network and you know, gain their trust and to be able to buy that cask. And now the economy is kind of helping a bit.
Okay.
So that's in what
the positive side has come about for you.
Yes.
Great. Well, we're gonna take a quick break, and when we get back, speak a little bit about the private labeling that you're doing for collectors, as well as the aging of cognac and why it's not always better if it's older. Welcome back to At the Root of It. This is Aaron Fitzpatrick here with my guest today, Nicholas Palazzi. And a quick sponsor thank you to Sam Edwards in Surrey, Virginia, as well as a thank you to our producer and engineer today, Jack Inslee and Nat Wiener. So we'll carry on discussion about cognac here with Nicholas and your private labeling that you're doing after going and sourcing and making these relationships that you've so cultured over the past couple years. Now you have the opportunity to make a very select amount of bottles for private collectors who've commissioned you to do so.
Right. That's I've been. That's the reason. That's how I got into this business.
Mm-hmm.
To make a long story short, 2 years ago, I happened to have purchased some of the best casks from my mentor. And living in New York, I had the opportunity completely randomly to meet a collector who became a great friend of mine now, and who wanted to get into cognac. Shortly after meeting this gentleman, We ended up flying to Cognac, spending 10 days there, discovering the region, tasting the cask I had in my cellar at that point, and tasting some other casks from small growers that I knew. And this person told me at some point, pointing at a cask, "All right, I want this cognac to be my house cognac." And we ended up working on this project, making I've bottled the cask yielded a little bit more than 350 bottles. Mm-hmm. I've bottled those bottles here and did all the arrangements so that those bottles could be made available to this gentleman at his New York house.
So it was just for his own consumption and his friends, or did he do anything with it as a sale?
No. There's no sales. Those people are collectors.
Yeah.
They enjoy eating. They enjoy drinking the finest wines and therefore the finest spirits.
Mm-hmm.
And they love the idea of having a unique cognac that nobody will taste.
Yeah.
Anywhere else except at their home.
It's one of a kind.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And little by little, I've done. From word of mouth, I have bottled another cask for somebody else, and then another cask, and this has been how I got started, and that's actually the core of my business, bottling hand tailored single cask cognacs, rare eau de vie as we call that in France, for collectors.
And this is your, in the Paul Marie Feast, that's your first personal private bottling for yourself, or?
It's not per se for myself. It's it has been a pleasure to work on that project, because when it's like your own baby, but it's also because those collectible those hand tailored special cognacs made for collectors are not available on the market.
Right.
So I saw that it would be interesting for somebody who really enjoy cognacs but cannot or doesn't want to get 300 bottles at one. You know, in one shot,
yeah.
On his table.
So this is available then for
absolutely.
Distribution.
Absolutely, yeah. There's this Paul Marie Fils cognac is available through some selected venues in New York.
Wonderful, great. The process for making a private label. I know we've had a show on At the Root of It that was focused on private labeling for wine. A large difference seems to be the fact that, given the age and where we're at with cognac in terms of its barrel situation, that it's already been aging for so long, you're giving samples of a finished product, whereas for a private labeling for wine, you have an opportunity to dictate a little bit more how that final product is going to be.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. I mean, when you do a private label for a wine,
mm-hmm.
You're basically selling a wine that has been at best aged 18 months,
mm-hmm.
maybe 24. Mm-hmm. You could reach 28, but you know it's not that long
right.
a time. For the cognacs, the cask of cognac I hand for and that I purchase and bottle and sell to collectors, we're talking 50, 60, 70 years old. So, of course, those, as you very well mentioned, those are finished products.
Right.
So there's two things you can do. You could bottle it as is, which is what I do, cask strength unfiltered, because that's really what I enjoy, and that's what I believe is the purest expression of the cognac.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could blend them.
Right.
So far, I've been simply sourcing those unique cognacs and bottling them cask strengths.
Well, fortunately, it sounds like some of your collectors have enough funds that they can invest in that quality product, where maybe blending would be at a less expensive range.
That's usually what happens. When you sell a cognac, when you find a cognac on the market, that say an XO, so XO meaning extra old, in term of law in France, it's supposed to be 6 years old or more. Most of them are like 15 years or 20 years. You blend different cognacs, maybe tens, maybe hundreds, and it's usually younger cognacs that are blended with some older ones, mm-hmm. and the older ones are gonna enhance the characteristic of the younger mm-hmm. ones. Mm-hmm. So that's where those unique cognacs are usually used for in blending, one part of this cognac and 100 parts of this other younger cognac to make your quote unquote regular XO.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of age, I read an article today that the landmark Tour d'Argent restaurant in Paris, which dates back to 1582, is cleaning out its 450,000 or so bottle wine cellar and putting 18,000 bottles up for auction. And coming down to that cellar, they discovered a Clos de Gruffier cognac from 1788, which was before the French Revolution.
Right.
That had impressive. So much fuzzy fungus on it, it looked like a matted cat fur. As we were speaking a little bit before the show, you did mention that I was curious to see what you would think if that cognac was going to be drinking well or at all, and it's hard to say when you don't know the conditions that it's been stored in, but
I would probably that's just a good question. I would probably mention just a few things quickly. It depends what you want to do with this bottle. It sounds very exciting. Something that's more than 200 years old is, right. is absolutely fantastic. Now, do you want to drink it? Or do you want to keep it and resell it, for example, through an auction? That's the basic question you should ask yourself. If you want to drink it, I would be pretty careful with that. Of course, it's a if you were to purchase a 70 cognac from the end of the 1800th century, it sounds fantastic. Now, how this cognac has been made? How it has been distilled, what, in 200 years from now, the distillation techniques were not as precise mm-hmm, as mm-hmm. the ones used now. The aging was actually not that common. Most of the cognacs were sold after a few months, at best a few years.
It's more like table kind of consumption to a certain extent.
Right. I mean, when
it's not as luxury product as it is today.
We're talking 1780s. So that's it's the beginning of the trade, of the cognac trade per se. And at that point, people saw that it was easier to distill a wine that was not really palatable, and because the distillation was enhancing his qualities. Now, they were not really at that point where they were thinking of aging the product for 10, 20, 30, 40
right,
years.
Right, yeah.
So you end up with something that is very old indeed, but how long has it been, has it stayed in barrel? Because
mm-hmm.
that's really what matters.
Mm-hmm.
A cognac is going to evolve because it has been stored in a barrel, because the oxygen will have oxidized some of the fatty acids in the liquid. That's what makes it better.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it's, we all know that a cognac or any spirits for that matter that has been stored in a bottle or in a demijohn has stopped evolving. So first thing is how long does this cognac have stayed in oak before being bottled? And then I would also mention that most of the time those bottles are stored in wine cellars. of course, there is more wine than there are spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, the person who takes care of the cellar is a wine person, not a spirit one. And the reason why I'm mentioning that is because most of those bottles end up being stored horizontally
mm-hmm.
rather than vertically. And the cork, when the bottle is stored horizontally, the cork is in contact with the cognac. And
is the cork in the cognac a same family of the cork that's being used in the...
Oh, that's that's the same family in that sense that it's the same in the same origin.
Right.
Now, those corks are made in a special manner so that they can be used in contact with a liquid that's 40% alcohol or more.
Sure.
And that's the main
not
difference.
Not as porous as a wine cork, I'd imagine.
Right. And also also it has been specially tasted and specially purified so that nothing will dissolve, because we understand that it's a liquid that's 40% alcohol, 80 proof or more, will dissolve components, molecules in the cork much easier.
That's the reason for keeping it vertical standing. So it
yeah, that's one of the reason. One of the reason. The other one being that you don't want the cognac to destroy little by little the cork. So that it was a long answer to say be careful before buying that. It sounds amazing. I collect cognacs myself and other spirits. I love the idea of having something that's 200 years old. Now, if you want to drink it.
Yeah, you know, if it becomes a showpiece just for yourself, that's another thing that could...
Sure. Yeah,
depending on how much you want to pay for that. Well, unfortunately, we have to wrap up this afternoon, but thank you very much for all that you've offered in terms of knowledge and also sharing your excitement for this new project that you have gotten already quite renowned for.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah, of course. Thanks again to our sponsor, Sam Edwards. You can listen to this show as well as every other on the Heritage Radio Network in the archives at www.heritageradionetwork.com. Thanks so much. El antifaz que tu maldad.